and you get this close and then you lose, damn, like, I'm back at the bottom of the totem pole with 28 other teams in the league. It was only two teams left. You worked that hard to be knocked back down the totem pole. Now you got to work your way back up that totem pole. So, like, I'm like, yo, I got to get back to that level. I want to be the one at the top of the totem pole. I just want a chance to do it again. You know what I mean? Like, I can't wait to get back on the floor and get it going again. You know, going to opposing cities, you know what I mean, ready to fight.
Man, this weekend I'm trying to launch 4 podcasts on the network, and
oh yeah,
oh god, I have to collect myself before this podcast and pretend that I'm not on like 2 hours of sleep.
Oh man, that's not fun. I remember last year, I decided it'd be a good idea to try to do like 30 team previews for the off season. So I did 30 podcasts, and I did like 4 guests per podcast, but I did 30 interviews in like 5 days, and it was horrible.
Oh god, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what
35, holy shit.
Yeah,
I guess I'm not doing it at that level. I mean, I think the off-season thing, I've kept it grinding and like done all these team previews and stuff. I think partially because the types of people who are listening to NBA podcasts in the middle of fucking September are really NBA fans.
Yeah.
And like, so that's my listener base, right? And they have nothing else to listen to, so, you know.
I'm always on the lookout for like random NBA podcasts about, I don't even care if it's like shitty Q&A stuff. I'm always looking out for them. So,
hey man, you know, shitty Q&A is what we do best at Almighty Baller. And I guess with that, the question is, what are we doing right now, Sean? And the answer is, we're recording another episode of Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast Raptors team preview. And I just got my friend Sean Woodley here. Hey, you want to throw your Twitter account out there? Talk about yourself a little bit?
Yeah. So I'm a writer, editor, podcast host at RaptorsHQ.com. It's SB Nation's Toronto Raptors site. Do some stuff for the radio station up here in Toronto as well, TSN 1050. And you can find me on Twitter at WoodleySean.
Definitely. Awesome. And yeah, I was just telling my friend Sean here, who does all of those things, that, you know, these team previews, and we're launching like 50 podcasts on the network, and by 50, I mean like 4, that I'm a little bit beat, but I mean, Sean, did you see how we made that Q&A transition there? Like, you know, we talked about me needing to like pull it together, and I feel great now. You know,
I feel like you've got it going right now. You've got the hosting thing down. You've welcomed me into the show. I'm feeling welcome. I'm ready to talk Raptors.
You know, have you seen, I think it's Ocean 12 or Oceans, I think it's Ocean's 13.
I just saw it on TV on the weekend. Actually.
Okay, is that the one where he has to pass the lie detector test and he has like a pin in his shoe or a nail in his shoe, and he puts his foot down on the nail to increase his heart rate when he's telling the truth? Do you know what I'm talking about right now?
Oh, God. I was not really paying attention when it was on TV, but yeah, it seems familiar. It might be 12.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, but yeah.
Well,
I vaguely remember the scene from some time, I think.
Well, I mean, that's totally fine, because typically references that are not mutually accepted and ran with, you know, I just thought, because like, who wants to listen to that? I mean, that's the worst.
Put down the timestamp of my lack of understanding.
But, you know, anyways, you know, references aside, I guess we can go ahead and start up with this podcast, which, of course, we're going to be covering the Toronto Jared Solingers. I actually, you know, the outline, the way I was thinking about this Raptors team and the way that this podcast should look like, it doesn't actually start with Jared Solinger. So that conversation is going to have to come later. And it's going to instead start with this idea of Masai Ujiri. I just think his style as a GM is a lot like the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, sort of the opposite of, you know, the Cavs or the Timberwolves, right? where they're all in on whatever they're doing. The Cavs are all in on winning, and the Timberwolves are all in on rebuilding. And, you know, the Ujiri is sort of, I mean, he's more than dipping his toe into contention. Like, he was, he went to the Eastern Conference Finals, but he's definitely not jumping in the swimming pool. And I guess my question to start out is, like, A, do you agree with me? And B, if you do, then how do you, as a Raptors fan slash writer slash podcaster, feel about that?
Well, so here's the thing for me is, what was Masiah supposed to do? Like, I mean, he came in, it looked like he was going to go with that nuclear, you know, rebuild, right? It looked like he was going to, well, he traded Bargnani, he traded Gay, and he almost traded Kyle Lowry. That deal was about to happen, but the Knicks got scared.
He had his bag packed, apparently.
Yeah, the Knicks got scared because Masiah had already fleeced James Dolan for a first-round pick for Andrea Bargnani. So that trade just keeps paying off. I don't know what he was really supposed to do. Like he wasn't like he couldn't just he never had the opportunity to sort of make the team in his own vision. I don't think even now. I mean, the team got accidentally good, and it's the best run the team's ever had. So even if this doesn't look like it's going to be, you know, a title winning core, which I guess we can get to later, or we can get into now. Like, you can argue whether or not you think this is the second or third best team in the Eastern Conference. I don't think anyone's saying that they're going to beat the Cavs anytime soon, especially with LeBron still kicking around. But for me, as a fan who, you know, started with the Vince Carter days and, you know, went through a lot of crap for a lot of years and, you know, years with Kevin O'Neal as the coach and like the horrible trade for, you know, Jermaine O'Neal and getting Sean Marion for 2 weeks, the one season after we blew it up. You know, I'm okay with just a sustained run of being pretty good. And the Raptors, you know, they leave themselves a lot of flexibility. They, you know, all of the contracts they have on the books right now, Valanciunas, Terrence Ross, Kyle Lowry's got a player option at the end of the year. He's probably going to opt out because he's criminally underpaid. But even like DeMar DeRozan's contract that they just signed, it's still movable in this cap climate. So I think at any time, if things go off the rails a little bit, say something happens this year, Masiah can pivot and sort of go all in with what maybe his original vision was for the team to begin with. But I think he's done a really good job just in sort of, you know, letting things ride out and being patient and not rushing anything and, you know, just kind of capitalizing on how accidentally good this team became.
Well, you see, and that's interesting in a bunch of respects, but I'm going to start with this idea that you brought up that this team is accidentally good, right? And my thought is when you hire a coach like Dwayne Casey, what you expect him to do best with coming out of the Maverick system with Rick Carlisle, you know, he won that 2011 championship. That team was, you know, never really had the ultimate talent. I mean, Dirk was, I think, 33 or 32 at this point. And I just did my Mavs team preview. And one of the things we talked about is how the Mavericks and the way that they operate, they're probably going to start this too big lineup with Dirk and Bogut that's going to be less mobile and then have this really good athletic wing rotation to bring off the bench. And that depth to be able to play in two different styles, a starting style, and then, I mean, sort of a better style, if that was the case, has been, I think, what has given this Raptors team success, because it seems to me like what Dwayne Casey does, and we'll see if you agree with this, he tries to slow everything down with a guy like Valanciunas, and now I hear that they're going to be playing Solinger at the four. So they slow things down to the extent that, I mean, fans sometimes get upset. It's like, you know, there's 10 seconds left in the shot clock and they haven't done anything. But it's almost like I think that's intentional. And they're just trying to grind away the starters so that they can switch out to the bench unit, which they know will be better than the other team's bench unit because of their depth, and then beat them with that. And that's sort of how you do it if you don't have a superstar.
No. But so, A, first of all, if you're not calling Kyle Lowry a superstar after last season, I don't know what's going on. I will defend Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say is now that you have a superstar, what do you do?
Yeah, Casey does a really good job of just kind of playing to guys' strengths and putting them in the best possible position to succeed. And, you know, the Raptors offense really works because it's really based on Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan running a ton of pick and rolls and either, you know, finding lanes to the basket to open up outside shooters or getting to the rim themselves and getting fouls called against them. That's how the Raptors offense succeeds. That's what DeMar DeRozan is best at. He's really good at getting to the rim and, you know, the pick and roll and reset and the thing they sort of do that kills the clock and looks ugly sometimes. You know, it's gotten a lot out of DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. It's gotten DeMar DeRozan paid pretty handsomely. So I don't know. Casey, you can argue whether or not you think he's a great coach. I think he's fine. Like, I don't think he's, you know, some sort of X's and O's wizard, but he knows what works. He, you know, at least offensively, a couple years ago with defense, the year where they lost in the first round to the Wizards, that, you know, his defense was really scrambling and it didn't really play to the, you know, sort of slower footed guys on the team that he had. And, you know, he had James Johnson playing a pivotal role defensively, which was never good. So, you know, you could argue whether or not he was, you know, good coaching defense that season in particular. I think it was just a matter of personnel and just like a slow adapt.
I think, on the whole,
like, Casey's pretty good at just putting guys in the best position to succeed and just letting his guys do what they do well. I mean, he doesn't, I think we'll see going forward a lot more of Jonas Valanciunas operating in the pick and roll a little bit. It hasn't really been a thing that's been used all that often, but, you know, he's getting better at that. And as that happens, Casey's going to look to that more, I think. You know, he's kept him to the post touches here and there. And, you know, that slows down the Raptors' offense and gets in the way of what, you know, Kyle and DeMar do as well. One of the biggest things people do is complain about the touches JV does or doesn't get. And, you know, what he does is, you know, he eats the ball in the post. He can't really pass at this point, or he, you know, he started to show some flashes towards the end of the season, but, you know, that didn't really work for the rest of the Raptors offense. It's not a good flow. You know, it doesn't, you know, create flow within the offense. So Casey is stubborn about these things, and it takes time for, you know, changes to be implemented, and maybe they will be more this year as guys develop, but I don't mind the offense. It's not the most pretty offense to watch. It's not gorgeous by any means, but it gets the job done. Clearly, the Raptors have been a top 10 offense for the last three seasons.
You know, you brought up this idea of getting Valanciunas more involved in the offense.
Yeah.
I think that there's a fatal problem that comes up. Or not fatal. I mean, there's a problem that comes up, and there's a lot of problems that honestly come up with having a guy like DeMar DeRozan that operates the way that he does, because if you want to run a pick and roll with DeMar DeRozan and Valanciunas, DeMar DeRozan's not that great of a passer, and he's not really going to be able to get it to Valanciunas in a way that he needs to be able to finish. And if you run a pick and roll with Kyle Lowry and Valanciunas, then you have kind of screwed up spacing because DeMar DeRozan is out there, right? So
yeah.
I think the team so much of the time is working around DeMar DeRozan's glaring flaws, and it's really hard to understand. It's like honestly really hard for me to like wrap my mind around, because there's a question that can be asked, and I guess I'm going to ask it. Like, is DeMar DeRozan good? Is he good?
He is. Yeah. Here's the thing. I think, there's obviously he's got some issues, right? He's not a very good defender at all. He was pretty awful this season. It was kind of mitigated by the fact that he was beside good defenders all year with Corey Joseph and Kyle Lowry and guys like that, and Patrick Patterson was great defensively as well this year, so that helped as well. But yeah, the defensive issues are there, and the lack of shooting is, you know, not great. Although he did creep up to, I think, 34% this year, which was, I think, a career high on a pretty high volume. And, you know, if he can just hit some corner threes, he's fine. I disagree with you in the passing respect. I think he's gotten a lot better in the last two seasons. He's, you know, become a really good drive and kick player. Again, they don't really use him and Valanciunas in the pick and roll all that often. I'd like to look that up to see how often that actually happened.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. And I have to jump in, because one of the key things I wanted to bring up in this podcast is how DeMar DeRozan makes it impossible to utilize the two players who I think have been super duper efficient and have really good chemistry, which is, of course, Kyle Lowry and Valanciunas. I mean, you can talk all you want about, like, oh, wow, if you put a good point guard and a good center out there, just cover the floor with spacing, and then you can run this sort of Stan Van Gundy type system based around the high pick and roll with these two guys. And Valanciunas would be really good at that. And, in fact, they are pretty good with that. But in the same way that having good three-point shooters makes that work, having DeMar DeRozan makes that really hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a drive and kick game, but trying to implement that at the same time as having this pick and roll game out there is just, it's messy, you know?
Yeah, he's not the ideal guy you want standing there on the elbow waiting for a pass from a center or from Kyle or whoever, right? It's, it's not ideal. But this kind of gets back to the thing I argued all last season, which is that Patrick Patterson should be playing with Jonas Valanciunas at all times because he's such a good floor spacer. He's gotten a lot better attacking closeouts as well. I mean, he's still kind of awkward and clunky sometimes, but he's gotten a lot better in that respect as well. And, you know, him and Valanciunas just make a ton of sense. You know, defensively, offensively, the geometry works. And for some reason, KC stayed away from that last year. He got really married to that bench unit, which was, you know, undoubted. Like, it was amazing. Like, nobody could stop that second unit that with Kyle. And then it was Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Patrick Patterson, and Bismack Biyombo. And, you know, Patterson worked with Biyombo for a similar reason. He's such a good floor spacer when Biyombo's very much not that. And yeah, it's not ideal having DeMar out there, but at the same time, he's a guy who, if he does, you know, catch the ball on a, like, he's not a catch and shoot guy, but he can catch it and drive or catch it and, you know, reset the offense. That's kind of been the sort of MO of the Raptors offense for the last few years, is that, you know, DeMar is a guy who can continue the flow of the, you know, maybe he doesn't take the catch and shoot three, but he can make that next, you know, attempt at penetration to open something else up. And if you have a healthy Damari Carroll on the floor, you know, then you have two guys in Patterson and Carroll that you can trust to sort of augment the lack of shooting that DeRozan gives you. So I think, yeah, you look at this season, if those guys are all healthy, and ideally if Patterson ends up starting at some point, I think Sullinger is going to start as the starting four, but that lineup of Lowry, DeRozan, Carroll, Patterson, Valanciunas makes a ton of sense on paper. In limited minutes last year, it was dominant. So that kind of, you know, offsets DeRozan's flaws a little bit. And I think, it opens up more room having three good shooters on the floor for him to do his thing, too.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how!
So I guess then, at that point, So I actually happen to think Dwayne Casey is a really, really, really good coach. I'd probably, yeah. I mean, I don't know, like 6 or 7 in the league. And I think it's because he's sort of being handed this roster where I think a lot of the reason why guys like Kyle Lowry, but from the top of the roster to the bottom of the roster, are guys who are playing better than they actually are. And that's, you know, and you mentioned that earlier, that he puts guys in positions for them to play well. And yeah, I agree. I think that they look better than they actually are. And part of that, I think, is that he has this system that is sort of set up in a weird retro type of way. It's almost like the Spurs last season, where he has decided where they're going to make their money, right, is by breaking things down on the defensive end so that they're not always switching out. I think Patrick Patterson is almost problematic, you know? I think it's like what Dwayne Casey wants out of his 4 and 5 are two big dudes who can crash the boards and who can set really good picks and who are going to almost sort of slow down the flow a little bit because, like I said, I mean, I feel like the way that he's compensating for a lack of ultra talent outside of Kyle Lowry, the way that he's compensating for the fact that he doesn't have LeBron James, right, is that he's saying, okay, we're going to limit the possessions that we have against starter units that are just straight up better than we are, right? Yeah. But our bench is going to beat you. And if we can equalize the amount of possessions between, you know, if we ramp up the possessions in 15 minutes of bench play and then tamper down the possessions in 30 minutes of starter play, then that ratio starts to equalize in a way that I think shocks a lot of the leagues. Like, you look at that roster and you're like, why are they better than everyone else? And it's because they're sort of changing the rules.
Yeah, I mean, and you make a good point. I think they were the second slowest team in the league last year. And, you know, when, you know, I mean, Kyle Lowry last year turned into pretty much the essential Houston Rockets player. He was threes, layups, and free throws. Like, he was super, super efficient. DeMar was, I believe, his PER was over 20. Valanciunas' PER was over 20. You know, you have these guys who can score really efficiently. And it makes sense to slow it down, especially last year once the defense was improved as they got away from the sort of scrambling pick and roll defense that they played and used a lot more icing and kind of kept Valanciunas and Biombo closer to the rim than the centers had been in years past. So, yeah, I totally agree. I really like the way Casey, you know, implemented that slowing down thing. The bench thing, yeah, I agree with. You know, he found early on in the season that bench unit that really worked that I mentioned earlier, and he rode with it. And, you know, maybe at some point he sort of sacrificed continuity in the playoffs to keep that bench unit together for as long as they could. I don't think they started, you know, like Patterson didn't start a game until two games into the Pacers series, mm-hmm. After Scola proved that he was pretty much useless. I hate to rag on Luis Scola, but because he was such a nice guy and such a good teammate, but man, by the end of that season, it was so infuriating, and the whole Scola-Patterson thing all year was like a nonstop debate back and forth. it was awful to like have to endure and endure the comments on the website and things like that with people with their Scola hate. But I mean, by the end of the season, it was kind of justified. But back to your point, yeah, Casey's done a really good job of, you know, I really think the slow it down sort of style works for this team, especially since their offense does take a little bit of time to develop because of, you know, the style they play.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things I was going to bring up actually is if you feel like Kyle Lowry is a superstar, that just to switch things up, just to try something different for this next year, which I'm not sure they need to do. I think I'm probably on Dwayne Casey's side insofar as I'm basically saying that their bench unit is better than their starting unit is basically what I'm saying. Like, yeah, Patrick Patterson is better than Jared Solinger, but he'll probably come off the bench anyways.
Yeah.
You know,
last year that was probably true, given you had Scola and for a big chunk of the season you had who was it was like a mismatch of like James Johnson or Norm Powell starting at the three.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, the starting lineup did fine when Scola was involved. Yeah, there was a big hit. But like Lowry and DeRozan as a combo all year were really good. But that bench unit, you're right, was awesome. I think this year, even if it is Solinger starting, a full season of Carroll and Valanciunas taking a step, I think, you know, the starters will be a better unit than the bench this year, just because you're not going to have Biombo anymore. You're putting more trust in Terrence Ross to be a bigger part of the bench scoring unit. And yeah, if Patterson ends up starting, then even more so, because that starting lineup, like I said, I think would be a buzzsaw, and Solinger next to, you know, Bebe off the bench, it's not great. So I think we could be in for a bit of a different sort of makeup of, you know, how the bench and starters sort of perform this season, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see. I guess if you're saying that Patrick Patterson should definitely start next to Valanciunas, mm-hmm. then it makes sense that your vision for this team is that they would try to switch that ratio of the talent that they're going to put in their starting lineup versus the talent that they're putting in their bench unit. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that'll work? I think that it'll work better. I think that it was almost the reason that they almost lost against the Pacers last year, right? And it was definitely the reason why they got obliterated by the Wizards the year before that. Mm-hmm. So I think that it'll work definitely better for the Raptors in the playoffs, I think, to play their better players, right?
Yeah.
But the regular season, I mean, I think that the Raptors might be, I mean, not in trouble. They're not going to fall out of the playoffs, but I think that making that sort of switch is going to introduce a lot more variability in terms of who's going to win this game, the Raptors in like a slightly better team and the Raptors in a slightly worse team. You know?
Yeah, I mean, last year you saw, you know, the Raptors were this kind of team where they could afford bad starts because their other lineups were so good, and they closed often with Patterson at the four. Like, Scola never saw the floor in fourth quarters. And so yeah, they did play their better players when they needed to. They just felt that they could afford, you know, the hit at the start of the game and that they were good enough to come back, which they usually were. It's interesting this year, given I'm curious how Casey's going to stagger it. I mean, Casey is pretty good at, you know, staggering lineups with his stars and having, you know, like I said, that Lowry lineup last year with the rest of the bench was a plus 16.4 net rating over the course of the season, 300 minutes together. Like, mm-hmm. It was fantastic, and I think there are ways where any lineup Kyle Lowry plays with is going to be good. So I think even if you put like lineup with like Lowry, Joseph, Ross, Sullinger Bebe or something like that, that could be a pretty good second unit, and then you can still have the continuity of the first of the starting lineup together. And that's the thing I think they were missing when they got to the playoffs and they switched everything up. You know, they're, you know, with Carroll being out for the season and Patterson coming off the bench, throwing that whole lineup together in the playoffs was kind of a shock, I think, to a lot of guys. And it was just you got to feel your way around playing with different guys than you're normally used to. So, I'm curious to see how he'll balance the talent as well. And that might be just where the Sullinger thing comes into play, and they'll try to run it back like they did last year, but just a better version of Scola in place in the form of Sullinger.
Well, so, and now we can talk about Sullinger, which, like, thank God.
Yeah.
if you're right that they're going to try to put more talent in their starting lineup and not be in a position where they go into the playoffs and they're like, okay, we need our best players on the floor because we're playing better talent or more overwhelming talent, and they lose, right? I think that what they might end up playing is, instead of having Kyle Lowry be the guy that's sort of determining, you know, the strength of the bench lineup, I think that hopefully, anyways, the way that I'm thinking about it is, if you're going to have Patrick Patterson at the four, right, then your spacing is a lot more opened up with DeMar Carroll too, right? So yeah. I would play it like, okay, if we're going to try to increase Valanciunas' usage, if mm-hmm. we really want this guy to take the breakout season that everyone's been wanting him to have, then we need to have that starting lineup just be Valanciunas, Lowry, and Space. So, of course, you start DeMar DeRozan, but you take him out, like, at the six-minute lineup or something like that, right? And put in Norman Powell, because Norman Powell's dope. And if you could play...
God, I love Norman Powell.
I wish the Raptors should play Norman Powell at every position, all at the same time.
I know. Dude's 6'4". Like, play him at the four. I don't care. He's amazing. My man crush on Norm Powell is real, man. Norm Powell's so good.
Well, and I think that I buy his jump shot more than most people. You know, I think that, what was it, like 40? It was like 45% or something from three.
Yeah, and like that was never his thing coming out of college, right? That was the big knock on him. He was all this athleticism, but he couldn't really shoot. But the Raptors have kind of done that with guys, right? Like they helped Patrick Patterson become a 3-point shooter. Luis Scola shot threes for the first time in his career last year. They seem to be able to develop guys shooting, and you know, that's
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, exactly. Lowry was, I think, a 39% 3-point shooter last year. You know, they've been able to develop that. I think that's what they're trying to do with guys like Bruno Caboclo, and DeLon Wright as well. So yeah, you're totally right. Sorry, I got sidetracked.
Well, no. I mean,
where were you going with that?
So where I was going with that is, so you would have the backbone of your starting lineup be that pick and roll between Valanciunas and Kyle Lowry.
Then
your go-to strength bench unit is sort of putting DeMar DeRozan in and using him like if Jamal Crawford fused with another Jamal Crawford and it just doubled the talent. And then they put another Jamal Crawford on their shoulders. It'd be like that, you know, just playing him like that, right? And having him just sort of obliterate bench units, you know, with our boy Jared Sullinger, who would be important to not be starting at the four. That's why, you know, Patrick Patterson would need to start, so that I think that Jared Sullinger and DeMar DeRozan have so much potential as a pairing. I think that that could be your offensive system, so that, and what I also think this does is it eliminates the problem of the fact that possessions took so long to get initiated and to get flowing, because it's almost like a decision was made at the start of each possession that it's like, okay, are we going to try to do drive and kick? Are we going to try to set a screen for DeMar DeRozan? Or are we alternatively going to run a pick and roll? I think it simplifies the offense and opens it up a bit. If you just say, okay, when we're featuring DeMar DeRozan as the number one option, then we're going to be a drive and kick, and then Sullinger's going to set picks for him, and that's how we're going to make our money. And then when we're featuring Kyle Lowry, we're going to be, you know, ramping up Valanciunas' usage, really, you know, utilizing his talent that I think has been there actually for a while. It's just that the team system hasn't been, you know, well-suited to his talent, I guess, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel like they should change up their system this year. I mean, what do you think? It sounds like I think that you agree with me.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of do. The problem you run into with, you know, if you're going to switch it up, like last year, as we mentioned, Lowry was the start of the second quarter guy with the bench guys. And DeRozan did that sometimes. He would usually do that at the end of first quarters as well. It was sort of DeRozan to the bench mob and Lowry in the bench mob that they kind of cultivated there. And DeRozan was good in those lineups. Just Lowry was, you know, super sane in those lineups with the bench guys. So, and I think that makes sense because, you know, Lowry's a better playmaker. He's a better shooter. He sets up for guys better than DeRozan.
Can you play Kyle Lowry 38 minutes a game again,
though? No, I'm not saying you can. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to try to stagger the two guys, I think you'd rather have Lowry play with the bench guys more often, just because with DeRozan, it gets sort of cramped with spacing with him and Corey Joseph and, you know, Sullinger and then Bebe. If those are four guys on your court, you're going to have some issues, I think. You know, I think a lot – I mean, I think they're going to use Sullinger a lot as a center this year. I know we've been speaking with him sort of in the context of him being a four, but I think we're underrating how many how often he's going to play as a center this year. I think And then maybe that opens things up.
Yeah, I was saying that he would be the starting center in the bench lineup because
– Yeah, yeah.
In that lineup, if he's playing center, then, one, you don't have to deal with as much of the defensive repercussions – of having a system that features DeMar DeRozan and Jared Sullinger. Because, like, defensively, that will be bad. But it's not going to be exploited in the same way that it would be if they were playing against starters. And the other reason why I think that would be the case is I think that, you know, the scales are going to flip a little bit. Last year, part of the reason why Kyle Lowry was so good with that bench unit is because he had a starting caliber role man. I mean, like, he had Bismack Biyombo.
Here's the thing with Biyombo, though, is
That he's great, and he's great. That's the thing.
His offensive limitations. I mean, people saw him in the playoffs, and it was awesome. And I was at those games where
he was really good in pick and roll.
Was amazing in the playoffs and was actually catching passes. He didn't do that in the regular season all that often. There were a lot of times throughout the whole season
He was pretty good in pick and roll in that bench unit.
It got a bit dicey with Biyombo in terms of, you know, him catching the ball. And it wasn't so much him not being talented. It's that teams didn't respect him. And you would have, you know, teams like totally, you know, coming up and, you know, selling out to stop Lowry and just kind of leaving Biyombo to roll to the basket by himself. And, you know, when there's a 50% chance that he's actually going to catch the pass that Lowry throws to him, you know, that's, and then another 50% chance that he's going to, like, actually put it in the basket because he had so many missed bunnies last year. You know, that really affects the way your offense runs, and it affects the spacing and everything. If you have, you know, if you have Lowry operating with Valanciunas, where teams really respect him as this big load who's rolling to the basket, I think that pick and roll combination is going to work. And I think, you know, Sullinger, while not a great pick and roll player, is probably a little bit more, you know, soft in the hands than Biyombo. So, yeah, again, off track talking about Biyombo. I keep getting carried away from last year's team. But, yeah, I think it's important that Lowry in the bench unit, whatever it ends up being, I think that still has to be sort of a staple, just because I think the spacing always works better with him. And him and Corey Joseph together are a monster defensively.
Man, I'm sure that I'm going through my computer looking for the point is, however, though, that option of running that pick and roll is not there with Jared Sullinger. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that now that you're substituting your bench center, you're going from Bismack to Sullinger, and, you know, they're very different players. I think that it means that it makes more sense to play DeMar DeRozan with the bench unit now than it makes to play Kyle. And that's actually super awesome because DeMar DeRozan sometimes holds the starters back, I think, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, last year the starting lineups numbers aren't very good. And, you know, you look at sort of the on-off, the number people like to quote with comparing Lowry and DeRozan is that, you know, Lowry was this crazy plus player and DeRozan, the team was better with him off the floor than they were with him on it. I think that one's a little skewed just by how awesome Lowry is and was last year. Like, just because Lowry was a top 10 player in the league last year doesn't mean DeRozan wasn't also good. But I think a lot of people sort of try to equate that. DeRozan does make things more difficult because he can't shoot really. And it's still a work in progress. And yeah, he's not the playmaker as Lowry is. But
if your center is Jared Sullinger, then he can hit, you know, a 16-footer. He can almost step out to three and...
I so don't want to be watching Jared Sullinger take threes this year. I really don't.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well,
Man, that's like my biggest fear this year is like him going like 22%. And the thing with him too, I wrote a thing about him for RaptorsHQ.com a few months ago when the signing first happened. You can go check that out if you want.
Was it Jared Solinger is exceptionally ordinary or something?
He's the
like
epitome
that?
Of okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was pretty close.
Yeah. Solinger's fine. Like he's a stopgap, right? Like the Raptors didn't have the flexibility this year to go out and make a big move, and that's fine. He's a stopgap until they can maybe try to do something at the position again next year. And he's better than he's better than Luis Scola. But in terms of where Solinger kind of fits into what the Raptors are going to do, I think he makes more sense as a backup five than a four a lot of the time, especially since, you know, I haven't mentioned this either, but I think Damari Carroll is going to play a lot at the four. I think they intended that last year, and they closed games with that at the start of the season before he got hurt. And they didn't really go back to it after because they were sort of dealing with the Valanciunas injury and stuff in the playoffs, and it sort of threw things off. But I think you're going to see a lot of Carroll at the four, Patterson at the four. I think the Raptors are going to play smaller, and you're going to see Solinger at the five. And, you know, the thing that startled me looking at Solinger's shot chart last year is that pretty much all of his threes came from above the break, which, you know, that's not how the Raptors offense really works. When they have those stretchy bigs out there, you know, you see Patterson in the corner a lot. You saw Luis Scola in the corner pretty much for all of his threes last year, unless he was, like, getting hit on the trail or something like that.
Playing a totally different role.
Sure, but I think that's where they need Solinger to be. I think that if they want him to... If they want to use him as sort of a faux stretch four where, you know, he will shoot and he will knock down maybe 30% of them. And, you know, like Scola last year shot well from three, but nobody respected his shot. That's why I call it a faux stretch four. He was just kind of there. And then when he hit the shots, it was a bonus. I think Solinger needs to occupy that kind of role and maybe eventually start having teams respect his corner three-point shot because, you know, corner threes are easier to make. Jared, you're shooting 28% from above the break on a lot of attempts. Maybe, you know, change around your distribution a bit. And I think hopefully the Raptors decide to use him in that role. I think, you know, obviously that's not what he was doing in Boston, but I think that's where he's going to be best utilized for the Raptors. If he is playing the four, and if he's at the five, he's just going to kind of be there as a body to, you know, half-assedly protect the rim because no one's protecting the rim like Bismack Biyombo did last year.
Well, so I think that Jared Solinger was asked to do something in Boston that he wasn't particularly great at doing, which is why he got replaced by someone who is particularly great at doing what he was asked to do. And now in Toronto, you know, like I said, Dwayne Casey going to use players in the best way for them to be used. I think it'll be really interesting to see how he operates offensively in terms of, okay, you're either going to be setting a pick in a pseudo pick and pop type of thing.
Yeah.
For DeMar DeRozan in this bench unit, if this were to happen, right? And by the way, this is what I think is going to happen. I could talk forever about how team previews are speculating, but you know, that's listener, you know, it's going to be fine. Like, just trust me, it's okay. So I think that either he's going to be, you know, being, you know, just a big boy to set a screen for DeMar DeRozan, or I think that it'll be interesting to see if he can do what Luis Scola did last year and hit 40% of his corner threes and let them do guard screening guard type of stuff between Corey Joseph and DeMar DeRozan. That would be cool. I would like that a lot.
Yeah, I'd like to see that too. I think the Raptors work well when they have that sort of safety valve. You see, you know, that's a big reason those lineups with Patterson are so effective is because he is such a good shooter from outside. He's streaky, but he's, you know, teams have to respect him, and when he's hot, he's on fire. So I'd love to see Solinger in that role, and if, you know, he can actually decide to take a three or two from the corner, then I think my opinion of him and sort of how he fits into the team will change. But I'm going to wait to see that before I say anything for a 27% career three-point shooter on a lot of attempts.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. But I like Jared Solinger. And I mean, you talk about, like, yes, I mean, on-off stats are flawed fundamentally, especially with the team like the Raptors who do funky things in terms of rotation.
Yeah.
But I mean, Jared Sullinger was a starter in Boston, and Boston was pretty good. I mean,
yeah, no, he's so much better than Luis Scola, especially Scola near the end of the year. I mean, Scola was just not a good defender whatsoever. I mean, I don't think Sullinger and Valanciunas are a great pairing defensively per se. You know, it's not the most fleet of foot combo, but you know, he's going to be better than Scola was at a lot of things, and he's a really good rebounder. He sort of replaces a bit of the rebounding you lost from Bismack Biyombo leaving. And the Raptors were one of the best rebounding teams in the league last year, so it's important to kind of hopefully maintain that with Sullinger. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect player. He's not a perfect player by any means, and, you know, there's a chance it doesn't work out at all, but it's a one-year deal. It's a $6 million deal, and if it doesn't work, the Raptors are just going to kind of run it back and see if they can, you know, do something with that spot next year. There's rumors of Serge Ibaka, and, you know, you never know what Masai Ujiri's going to do because nothing gets leaked by the Raptors. If you ever hear a Raptors rumor, it's not coming from the Raptors. I can tell you that 100%. It's always going to be coming from someone else. The Raptors keep a tight ship. So we have no idea what they might have up their sleeve to sort of work with that power forward spot going forward. They got trade chips. They have all that stuff. And just getting the Sullinger deal done, you know, quietly, you know, in a summer where guys, you know, similar to Sullinger, were getting a ton of money over a lot of years, just sort of waiting it out and getting a guy like Sullinger, very similarly to what they did with Biyombo last year, a guy who didn't really have any offers, like a few days into free agency, and the Raptors just kind of pounced and, you know, got a steal of a year from Bismack Biyombo. I think Biyombo you're going to see next year in Orlando, especially given the weird makeup of that roster. I think the things that he does poorly are going to stand out more. Like I said, the inability to catch a pass consistently. And just sort of, he has nights where he just doesn't do anything. Even in the playoffs, I mean, there were 20 playoff games. He was amazing for 10 of them. But, you know, most of the Pacers series, other than that Game 5 comeback, he was kind of non-existent, didn't do a whole lot. There were like 3 or 4 games in the Heat series where he wasn't really effective, and 4 of the games against the Cavs, all 4 that the Raptors lost, Biyombo was a non-factor or worse. So, I've seen a lot of people kind of being like, hey, they lost Biyombo, how do they stay as the second seed? I think, you know, Sullinger does a lot to make up for what Biyombo, you know, he's not the rim protector, as I mentioned, but he makes up for a lot of just sort of the net loss that Biyombo was. And I still think the Raptors, if you look at the roster top to bottom, if you factor in, you know, some growth from Valanciunas and Norm Powell, and, you know, DeLon Wright's hurt until December with a shoulder injury, but, you know, even he in summer league, he looked way, you know, it was too easy for him. Him and Powell both looked like they were just like walking through it in summer league. So I think that I think that bodes well for Wright as well going forward as sort of a third point guard who the Raptors can rely on to, you know, get Lowry a bit more rest or whatever you want. There's a lot of room for internal growth. I don't think it's coming from, you know, Bebe or Bruno, but the other guys on the roster I'm pretty excited about.
You know, last year they were the 7th youngest team in the league.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be younger this year. We'll see how the rosters settle up, but they could be like 5th or 4th or something like that. But people don't think of them as a young team because there's this disparity. There's like a Generation X and a Generation Y.
Yeah, their core guys are older for sure.
So I agree. I really like the young guys, but this is a straight 16-17 preview. So I do want to discuss the possibility of a trade happening for this Raptors team because I think ultimately the right move for Ujiri is to sort of say, okay, I don't think any trades have come up for me that I can make to really make this team a contender, and I don't want to do a trade with a whole bunch of young assets unless I really think that I'm actually going to contend. You know, like taking the step from, say, 55 wins or 50 wins to 55, like, you know, they want to get substantially better if they're going to be selling out their future. So I agree, the young guys are good. I'm not even going to say that it's a good idea to cash in those chips, but there's sort of an elephant in the room that the Raptors aren't a contender, at least on the level of like the Warriors and the Cavaliers. Yeah. But are there any trades that you think would make them that could happen in the 16-17 season? You know, just to name a few players, Paul Millsap has always been like a Raptors.
He's been the dream forever, man.
And like, God, it'd be like if Patrick Patterson was fused with Patrick Patterson, and then there was another Patrick Patterson on top.
Yeah.
Paul Millsap's a big one. I thought about them going for Bradley Beal. You know, if they go in to be a contender, maybe having DeMar DeRozan as the shooting guard is bad. And I also think that Derek Favors. That's a few ones. So, yeah. Is there any trade, any semi-realistic trade, or anything that you have your eye on that could happen before the trade deadline this year that would put the Raptors over the top?
Well, okay, so let me first address the thing you said about them not being a real contender. I think that's absolutely true. I don't think they're on the level of the Golden States and Cleveland's, but as I mentioned earlier in the show, this team has been a disaster for most of its existence. And, you know, it's really tough to say goodbye to an era. If you don't think this is a team that can win a title, I think it's really hard, and I think it's why Ujiri hasn't done anything really to alter the core.
Well, yeah.
To just throw away the best stretch of, you know, franchise history you've ever had. And, you know, I really don't see, like, the Raptors, they're establishing themselves, right? Like, the stink is almost off. They hosted the All-Star game this year. Other than the cold weather, it went off amazingly well. There were a lot of rave reviews about it. I would not be surprised at all if it's back here within the next 10 years or so.
They have a new mascot.
Yeah, they're on the rise, and I think, you know, riding out this stretch of being pretty good and, you know, having playoff moments every year and having a couple rounds at minimum, there's really something to it. I think a good comparison I like to make is the Memphis Grizzlies. I mean, the Grizzlies probably aren't going to win a title with this core, but, you know, the last, you know, 6-7 years have been awesome for that city and that franchise, and it's really catapulted them to a level that, you know, they're legitimate, they're relevant in the NBA, and the Raptors never were that before, and they're just getting to that now. And even if this doesn't end in a title, I mean, I look back on the playoffs that just happened, and there were so many amazing moments and memories that, like, I'm always going to take with me, even though it didn't end with the ultimate prize. I mean, those two games against Cleveland felt like a title. The comeback in Game 5 against the Pacers with the Norm Powell moon dunk was amazing. It was, up to that point, it was the craziest game I'd ever attended in my life. And moving on from that, obviously, you have, you know, Game 1 against the Heat where they ended up losing in overtime, but Kyle Lowry hits that three-pointer to send it to OT from half court. And
that was, you know, so cool.
Exactly. These are the kind of memories that just they accrue over time when you have these playoff opportunities, and it's really tough to throw that away. In terms of trades for this season, I don't see them making a huge deal, although they do have the flexibility to do it. You know, Terrence Ross's deal is movable. Jonas Valanciunas, if they're really trying to land a big fish, is a very tradable and attractive contract, especially with him being, what, 23 now? He's really exciting. He's 24. So, there's lots to move. They have two first-round picks coming up this year. The joke among Raptors bloggers and Raptors Twitter has always been Boogie Cousins, and it's a pipe dream for sure. But I think, you know, a package of Valanciunas plus Powell and those two first-round picks might get you started on a conversation for a guy like that.
I heard that the Kings love white European centers. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, that's where you got to be. Got to be looking, right? How many did they need? Like six more to complete their full roster of it. So, you know, if you can get them Valanciunas, why not? That is a pipe dream, of course, and I don't think it's going to happen. And I think the sort of elephant is that the Celtics can trump any offer that the Raptors can make for any one of these stars. So you might be getting the second in line kind of guy for something like that. I don't really see a big trade happening this year. Maybe if the Serge Ibaka thing doesn't work out well in Orlando, they can get a rental sort of deal set up with him. And you know, maybe it doesn't cost too much. I don't know. There's a lot that could happen, and you never know what kind of names come up over the course of a year. I don't really see Derek Favors being on the market just because I think Utah's going to be awesome this year, and I think he's a really big part of that. I think it's a couple years from now, maybe we're talking about Anthony Davis or something like that as a potential guy. The Raptors, who, you know, they're one of those teams who's been able to store up lots of assets while also being really good at the same time, which is kind of rare. Normally these teams that are, you know, amassing all these assets kind of just are, you know, like Houston was before James Harden, just like, you know, maybe an 8 seed. They have some stuff that's interesting, but not that great. the Raptors have been, you know, to the conference finals, and they also still have a lot of flexibility and chips going forward. So maybe it doesn't happen this year, but I think we could see something of the like that, you know, Masai's kind of been building up towards pretty soon. I don't really agree with the Bradley Beal thing. You know, people knock on DeRozan, but
yeah, I don't either.
If the dude doesn't miss time, Bradley Beal doesn't really play very much. So, yeah, I don't know if anything happens this season, but if it doesn't, I think this team has the flexibility and is going to be good enough, you would think, to sort of run it back next year and try to do something big again with the, you know, the assets they have in store.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I think that Celtics thing that you mentioned, that they can pretty much trump anything that the Raptors could be able to offer, that's a glaring problem that's inherent in having the second biggest war chest, or the third.
Although, I mean, you know? Danny Ainge does overvalue his stuff and is very stubborn, so who knows? Jay Crowder's going to be an all-star, man.
Are starting to underestimate what the Celtics have. Whatever. Hey, this isn't a Celtics team preview. The way that I envision that going, when I asked who you think is going to be traded, if that were to happen, is that, yeah, we get that answer like, no one could put us over the top. And clearly the best thing to do is to ride out the good times. Like, you know, being a Raptors fan is finally fun. Like, we are being taken legitimately. We are going to have a lot of time to develop our young players, and we're going to have the young players to develop, even with Kyle Lowry on like a massive mammoth contract and DeRozan on it too. They'll both expire at about the same time. Yeah. And then all these young guys will be developed by then. And then you can see if you can contend with that core, because realistically, I don't see the Raptors being able to put together that, you know, killer deal.
Those guys aren't just available, right? Like, there's not many of those guys that get moved, and the rumors that happen around guys like Cousins or Blake Griffin, for example, like, a lot of the time they don't come true. Or most, like, 99% of the time they don't. Another thing, too, though, just to sort of hijack you for 1 second, it could totally go the other way. And you mentioned Lowry, and he's in that contract year. He's going to opt out at the end of the year because he's criminally underpaid. And, you know, if you play this season 100 times, this upcoming season 100 times, maybe 3 or 5 times, it goes terribly. And in those situations, this might be a time where, you know, Masai might have that opportunity to sort of reshape the roster and reshape the core. And if the Raptors come to the trade deadline and they're, you know, 5 games under .500, whether through injuries or just poor performance, maybe you get a regression from Lowry after his career best season. Maybe Valanciunas doesn't develop the way you hope. Maybe Sullinger is a complete nuke to the starting lineup. Who knows? But if things go poorly, which, you know, they go poorly for teams all the time, I don't think they are going to for this Raptors team, because the continuity is there and they're reasonably healthy. They do a good job of keeping guys in the lineup and getting guys proper rest, other than Lowry last year, who played a ton but also held up. But that's besides the point. You know, there's a small but not insignificant chance things go poorly and Kyle Lowry gets traded at the deadline and things kind of, you know, go back to the reset. And, you know, the Raptors have afforded themselves the flexibility there too, where they can trade DeRozan in that case, and they can trade away, you know, I mean, Patterson's a free agent this year. They can let him walk and get big money somewhere else. You know, they have Corey Joseph to sort of take over the reins for the next future Raptors team, you know, with Norm Powell and Valanciunas still being young. Like, those guys can be sort of the next, you know, half-assed core as they go forward if they want to blow it up. And if, you know, it gets to the point where, you know, 31-year-old Kyle Lowry is breaking down, maybe you look at that. I don't, it's horrible to think about, because I love Kyle Lowry like family, and it would be, you know, just the worst to see all this come crashing down over the course of 50 games or so. But, you know, that's, I don't think that's completely off the table. And I last night in Toronto, I did a Hoop Talks panel, just sort of talking about the upcoming season and, you know, just sort of bigger picture stuff. And when I brought up this Lowry thing, people got really upset, and I can't blame them, because it's a terrible, terrible reality that I don't think is going to come to pass. But if it does, you know, it wouldn't be the biggest shocker in the world. And it's sort of this weird elephant in the room. And you even get to the question of, do you want to give Kyle Lowry a 5-year deal for the max when he's 31 and, you know, have him locked up till he's 36? The deal will be tradable. That's always the caveat. But, you know, it's a really big commitment for a guy who's in his 30s and, you know, was coming off a career best season. Maybe last season's the best we ever see from Kyle Lowry. That's a very real possibility, too.
It almost definitely is. But
I wouldn't be surprised if he did something very similar this year, but at the same time, who knows? It's very fickle, right?
The second best player in the Eastern Conference, because I think that it was Kyle Lowry just last year, right?
I think it was Lowry last year, too. I think Paul George, by the playoff, in the playoffs, he was a monster, but during the regular season, I'd say it was Lowry, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that the second best player in the Eastern Conference doesn't take a massive step back unless there's an injury, especially if that player proves that he can play, I think, nearly 82 games, but maybe like 75 games, something like that, at like 38 minutes a game. So, I mean, I think that there will be a regression with Kyle Lowry, but if only just because I think that they're going to limit his role and tamp down his minutes a little bit, especially facing the potential reality of giving a 5-year contract to him. Like, it would be, if he plays 38 minutes a game, then I would almost expect them to let him walk in free agency, because I feel like they know better than that, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, just because playing him 38 minutes a game was a big part of why they were so good last year. And if they want to be that good, like, that's kind of the reality. But I agree. I think they're going to try to protect him this year. I bet he gets more rest days if they're, you know, up in front, or even, you know, in a race for second and third. I think they'll probably try to get him more rest days.
Or maybe maybe they could retool their bench to feature DeMar DeRozan instead of
Kyle. There's an idea. But I think, you know, I mentioned DeLon Wright. He won't be back till December, but I think that in the second half of the season is an option as well, to sort of, you know, you can live with having him and Joseph for a game to be your point guard tandem. And Norm Powell, at Summer League, dude was handling the ball quite a bit and looked pretty comfortable doing it. I think there's a chance he gets some sort of, you know, third point guard. You know, he's not going to get it all that often, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him handle the ball a lot this year, especially in the second unit. Yeah, it's sort of a weird thing that they have with Lowry. It's an awkward situation. It's an awkward age for him, and it's an awkward, you know, position for the franchise to be in, given he is the franchise. He is so good. He's so important to everything this team does. He makes everything click, and you know, it's a weird future they could be signing up for with, you know, guy moving into his mid-30s at a max deal, especially if things don't go, you know, super well this year. I still think they will, and I think eventually Lowry does sign for a max. I doubt it's the max. I think he'll probably give some sort of, you know, similar to DeRozan this year. DeRozan took a little bit less than the full max just to sort of give the Raptors a bit of a break. I think Lowry probably does the same. I would, you know, if Lowry comes in at about $30 million a year as a starting salary next year, I think that's probably the ballpark we should be looking at. But yeah, it's a strange reality that we kind of have to deal with, and it's very fickle for sure.
So last thing, how about a win projection? It sounds like, you know, you're iffy, but I'm sorry, when you're a guest on someone's podcast, especially for a team preview, you have to say some two numbers that add up to 82 at the end of the podcast. It's like a thing that you have to do.
All right, yeah. I think it's very likely they approach what they did last year but don't quite reach it. I'm going to say 54 and 28. That adds up, right? I would say I think I'm good there, yeah. I would say 54 and 28. I think they finished second in the East. I think Boston probably has about 52 wins. And I think, you know, everyone's looking forward to that second round series, Boston-Toronto. I still think Boston is a little bit behind Toronto in terms of overall talent top to bottom. I think Boston's definitely deeper, but I would much rather have Kyle Lowry than Isaiah Thomas in a playoff series, I can tell you that. And Al Horford's great, but Lowry for me is just, he's the best player on either team, and I don't think it's particularly close, especially if you base it on last year. So I'd give the Raptors the edge there. So yeah, second seed, 54 and 28, and things are happy again in Toronto, which is, it'll be the first time they've ever made the playoffs 4 years in a row, which is crazy sad, but also, you know, kind of awesome that it's happening with such a likable group of guys, and with a guy like Lowry, who is just, I mean, he's almost got to the point where he's the best Raptor of all time. It's really getting to that point.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you could argue that, I mean, the three guys in the conversation, right, are what, like?
Yeah, it's Vince, Bosch, and Lowry. I think Bosch is pretty much number three at this point, just because of the lack of playoff success. I mean, if you're looking at impact, I would say Carter, just because, I mean, you look at now all the Canadians that are coming up in Canadian basketball. You got Wiggins, Jamal Murray, Tristan Thompson. All these guys reference Vince Carter as why they started liking basketball. And I think, you know, someone needs to do a documentary on what Vince Carter and that whole whirlwind did for basketball in Canada, because it was an incredible time. It's the reason I'm a basketball fan. I remember going to games where Vince scored like 47 points and just destroyed, you know, and laid waste to whoever he was playing. And he was amazing. But I think in terms of accomplishment, Lowry's already passed it. I mean, he's made it to a conference final. He was third team All-NBA this season. Should have been second team All-NBA. But, I think, especially this season, if Lowry does kind of do what he did last year, I think there's a real case for him to be number one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't heard that. Listeners, you should check out the upcoming episode of WNB Almighty Ballin, because that just reminded me, because earlier we recorded a podcast with Carla McGee, who was on the 96 Atlanta women's basketball team that won gold there. And in 94... the athletic stuff was added to Title IX, and that sort of cemented women's basketball, them coming back after being beaten by the Ruskies, and then they came and won gold in Atlanta, and like the WNBA was sort of solidified then. So that just reminded me of that. But, you know, regardless of whether or not that's even there, that's a really interesting idea. And hey, Sean, speaking of interesting, you've been incredibly interesting on this podcast, talking about an incredibly interesting team. I think we've had a really interesting time. You know, talking to Sean Woodley, I listen to you on Raptors HQ because I'm not in Toronto, but I guess in Toronto you're doing what, like you said, TSN 1050?
Yeah, it's the radio station that I produce for a little bit here and there.
Yeah, so check that out. Follow at Woodley Sean. And, you know, you misspelled your first and last name there.
What?
Yeah, well, you don't spell Sean W-O-O-D-L-E-Y.
Okay, yeah. Sean Woodley was taken, all right, man. I've been, like, trying to, like, DM the guy who has Sean Woodley forever, but I think, I don't think it's happening. I think
the guy who owns at Almighty Baller, okay, is French, and he doesn't understand. So, anyways, follow at Almighty Ballin instead, and keep an eye out for some great podcasts coming soon. Flagrant Take, WNB Almighty Ballin, Ball by the Numbers, and Straight Out of College. So, yeah, anyways, find that all on blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. And, yeah, listen up and listen to Sean's podcast as well. Hey, Sean, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. And it was good talking to you.
Yeah, definitely. Episode over.
Awesome, thanks, man.
All right, well, hey, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Anytime, man.
Yeah, definitely. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, cheers.
See ya. Indeed.